I want to begin by thanking you because there's multiple fronts in which we need to thank you. First of all, we were here in January. My wife was here. We couldn't afford to all come here, so my wife came as our ambassador. And the fires in Northern California had caused us to lose about a third of our donors, and we were in trouble. And we came here, and you guys answered our prayers. So I want to thank you for that. You helped tremendously. I also want to thank you for allowing me to speak and being so gracious. I want to thank Corky and Pam for letting us stay with them. We appreciate it. We love being here, so thank you. I titled this, You May As Well Fight, because we're kind of all under attack, and I'll get that in a moment. But Mongolia and here are very different fields, as you can imagine. Mongolia is a harsh climate. There aren't a lot of niceties that you would have here, such as running water. There just isn't a lot there. It's very harsh. And as a result, the people stick together. We can walk into a strange area and have someone invite us into their ghair, which is a tent, if you will, to eat. Now, we don't speak the language. We don't look like them. We don't even sound like them. We have different habits. But they invite us in anyway. And we didn't ask. They just do it because life is so hard. You'll hear them say that. Life is hard there. And here, it's a little different, isn't it? Here we got another different problem. We've got prosperity, which is a much harder mission field. We bring a message of hope to Mongolia, and they get it. They understand. Here, you've got Facebook, the Giants, you know, or the A's. Better be careful there. You've got TV, you've got your phone, you've got apps for everything, and no time for God. And it's hard to cut through all that noise. It's got to be exceedingly difficult. So I'm in a good place. We're in a good place because we know what they need there. Here it's much more different and innocuous. So you have to learn how to pick your battles and what to fight for. We're going to be looking at page 225 in your pew Bibles. And it's Deuteronomy 6:4. This verse was written a very long time ago, about 1,400 years before Jesus came onto the scene. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. It's called the Shema. And the Orthodox Jews to this day on Friday night will repeat this. Love the Lord your God with all your soul and with all your heart and with all your might. They'll repeat it on Saturday night. They'll say it on Sunday night. You get the idea here. It is the cornerstone of Judaism. And it is foundational to us. Jesus grew up doing the Shema. Every day. When he left his parents and went to the temple and they found him there, he was studying the Old Testament. So I want you to see something. The Old Testament and the New Testament are fulfillment of Jesus. They're not separate books. Jesus studied the Old Testament. That's what he learned from. And this verse, Deuteronomy 6:4, pulls you into the Lord and is what the either Mongolia or here draws their strength from. I love hearing that you're serving. Because I find, anecdotally, I have no evidence of this, but just talking to churches, the ones that serve are the strongest and tend to grow. If you're having a hard time, if there's difficulty in your life, and I realize there are some people that never have difficulty in their life, I've just never met them. But there's probably someone out there. Serving, God is such a genius, can I just tell you? Serving helps with your problems. Somehow, something happens when you go out and you serve, you forget about your problems. And sometimes, like it or not, you say, wow, I didn't realize how good I've got it. So in Mongolia, we're reminded of that every day. Wow, we had it really good. This verse is what Jesus looks at when he's challenged. You recall that in Matthew and Mark, he's challenged. What's the greatest command of all? And he goes back to this verse and says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And what's the next one? Equal to it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Equal to it. 1,400 years before Jesus, and he says, that is the greatest command. And he pulls in love your neighbor as yourself. He's talking about service. He's talking about how you plug into this love your Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. And how you get closer to God is by serving. So I encourage you to do that. And we are really short on time, so I'm going to move forward to towards the end. I just want to remind you of something. When you think it's hard, or it takes too much time, or there's a problem in your life, and service is too much, I just want to read you something from 2 Corinthians. Paul, who I think is a great, great missionary, went through this. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. That's one short of death. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have spent in the deep. You don't want to go sailing with Paul. He had a lot of problems there. I have been on frequent journeys, and dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers in the sea, and dangers among false brethren. Why did Paul do all this? Because he believed. He believed and he loved the Lord his God. Death itself cannot stop the proclamation of the gospel. So although sometimes when you're serving, it seems hard, it seems difficult, you don't have the time, you've got your own problems, you got to get up in the morning, you may as well fight. You may as well go out there, you may as well share the gospel with everyone. And by the way, they're probably going to attack you anyway. The people that say, oh, geez, you don't know what you're talking about, or admonish you for trying to share the gospel, they like it when you're quiet. They would prefer it that way. You don't have to. If they don't like it, move on. Dust the sand off your feet and just off your sandals and just move on. It's okay. It's not a big deal. It's not personal. But it will help you also, and that's the amazing part of the gospel, is doing that actually makes you grow spiritually and trust God more. So I'll end with that, and we'll talk a little bit about Mongolia. See if you can come up. We put up here, this is in line with what we were just talking about, without risk there is no faith. That's a Soren Kierkegaard quote. And what we ask people to do is come alongside us. Take a little risk. Take a little risk and trust God. And that's what it comes down to. Next slide.
So this is our family, who you've already met, and our teammate, Mary, here in Darhan. This is the central square in Darhan. And our children, Cameron, disappeared again. He is our oldest, and he's our reader. Connor is our baseball boy. He's a doer. He likes to be out. Cameron, we used to have to force to go outside. Connor, we couldn't get inside. Coral is light and life. That's how somebody described her to me, and that fits perfectly. She just is bubbly, and you can always see her from a distance because she's doing this as she walks along. So that is our family in Darhan.
Mongolia, where we're situated, is between China and Russia. We're about an hour south of Siberia. It has the coldest capital in the world. It gets down to, we'll get to that in a little bit, but it can get down to negative 50, negative 60 degrees. The language they speak is Mongolian. It has a Cyrillic alphabet, so it's got the Russian alphabet. It's a nomadic culture. They would move the capital to wherever the herd was until the Russians invaded in 1924. So the capital was wherever they were at the time. And the population is 3 million people with 40 to 60 million herd animals. So they're, one of their main industries is meat. There's some good news and bad news in that, and I'll tell you about that afterwards if you want to talk about that.
And fun fact, just because it is the coldest capital, we learned that at minus 40, Fahrenheit and Celsius meet up, and it's just minus 40. It doesn't matter where you are. So that was an interesting fact. In addition to being the coldest capital in the world, it is also the most polluted capital city in the world because they burn coal.
So they're very proud people. This is Genghis Khan Empire. It actually got a little further than that. It went down into India. At one time in history, about the 13th century, they went from the Sea of Japan all the way over to Europe, down into the Middle East. They controlled Baghdad. They controlled India, China, and the peninsula there. It was the largest land empire in the history of the world, greater than the Roman Empire by far.
And that was under Kublai Khan.
Yeah, that was Genghis Khan. So they're very proud people. The challenges we face is it's a one-city country. You have the capital city, which holds half the population, and then you've got the countryside. And it's very much like here in this regard. You have a city population, then you have the suburbs around it, and then you have the countryside. Mm-hmm. And in the suburbs, it's almost exclusively what we call the Gare District, which is slums.
And just to give you a sense of the size of the country, it's a fairly big country. It's almost two-thirds the size of the United States, about the size of Mexico.
They have something there, they have droughts, and they have something there called ZUDs. ZUDs are defined as 30 days or more below negative 30 degrees. And they're terrible because they're cold, but they're also terrible because it kills the herds. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the herd dies off, and then they have no income, so they come to the outside of the city into the slum.
They have nothing they can do. So.
And so they're forced to do that. The pollution, as Celia is saying, has the highest impact on children. They can have infant mortality rates up to 60%. Mm-hmm. And when the Russians invaded in 1920, they brought vodka with them. So there's lots and lots of alcohol, and the men hide in that, yeah. Almost exclusively male. So they do that.
This is the capital city, Ulaanbaatar, where we lived the first year. And this is actually not a horrible day, unfortunately. This, you can actually see the houses. That when the pollution is really bad, you can't see past here. It is incredible. And these houses, these are called Hashabaisen. There is no running water, no electricity. They have a coal stove. And that's what they have to burn because it is so cold. So.
As I was mentioning from the pulpit, they have Tibetan Buddhism and animism there, and it's a very fear-based culture, partly because they need to be afraid of a great many things environmentally, but also it's just part of the shamanism that they're involved with. So my backpack, which I brought with me, if I set it on the ground, I get yelled at because it allows evil spirits to get in. They see evil spirits as low into the ground. When I walk into a gare or a store, I have to pick up my feet, because at the doorway there'll be a ledge about 3 inches high to keep the evil spirits out. And I can't tell you how many times the first year I fell into a store. But but now you step up and in. It's kind of like if you're ever in the Navy going through a portal.
Another way life is hard. When you're grieving, they don't allow people to cry for the first 30 days. Because that prevents the spirit from going into the next world. And so you're literally told you cannot cry for your sister, your brother, your mother, your father. Our teammate Mary, who you saw in one of the other pictures from last year, her mother died while we were there on the field. She had gotten to come home at Christmas and spend time with her, spend a couple months. But then when she came back, about a month later, she passed away. And Mary teaches teachers, and so she made really good friends with her teachers. 6 of her teachers wanted to come to church with her to support her. That's what they do. They come around you very well. So they came to church with her, and they sat through this. It was their first time at church. but they came for Mary. And Mary was crying, and they reached over and they said, "Don't cry, don't cry." And she said, "No, no, I know where my mother is, and it's good." And that really struck them in a different way. And then they heard the gospel message, and I'm getting chills again. They heard the gospel message, and I rode home with one woman. Her name was Sagan, and she reiterated again, life is hard. And she said, "I understood that message, that hope was incredible to see, because it's not like that here." And so it's the irresistible draw to Jesus that really strikes home with them. And she goes to church now, and she is a follower.
You'll notice real quick, if you can go back to that previous slide for just a moment, that is some sort of god they have there, and he's got very big fangs. You can't see it. Mm-hmm. But all the I call them demons, all the demons have pointy teeth, and you call on one to get rid of the other. I mean, it's just, and you have multiple small g gods there.
We had one pastor say, think of who they're praying to. I mean, they're inviting that evil into their life.
So in the 1920s, they were invaded. As I said, the Soviets brought with them alcohol. And the nice part is they brought in some roads, some fixed cities, and some other things that the people could enjoy. The problem is they built it from a military perspective. So all the cities are built in between mountain ranges and create this bowl effect, which is why you saw that smoke in the capital city.
The mountains are very close in Ulaanbaatar.
They burn coal, and there's no way for the coal smoke to escape.
It's like Southern California.
So they built them in the mountain ranges so you couldn't invade easily. Mm-hmm. The railroad tracks would not go into the city. They'd stop a mile out, so you couldn't use their railroad tracks against them in a military operation. So everything was thought of from that perspective. In 1990, they left when the wall collapsed. And when they left, they took everything, all the teachers, all the engineers, all the folks that worked on infrastructure, within 24 hours. And wow. So there was this vacuum there in 1990s when the wall collapsed of everything, services of any sort.
And I teach in a high school there, and it's housed within a university. And they are laying teachers off right now because there's an age group in the early 90s where they just didn't have kids. They had no food on the shelves, they had nothing. So they're laying teachers off because they're not gonna have any students coming in those couple years. They just had no kids.
Okay, we're short on time, so. Okay, so our mission. You'll receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you'll be my witness in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. We're sharing the gospel, and the idea is to go out from where you are into other locations. Now, you don't have to do that. You can serve right here. Some people go further than others. There's no difference there. The other is the Great Commission. Interestingly enough, there was a bar study we heard just last week. 51% of the Christians
didn't recognize what the Great Commission was.
Didn't know what it was. I couldn't believe that when I heard that. 51% couldn't do this. So I'll read it for you. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And it is a command. It's an imperative. They don't tell you this in Sunday school or even when you're a new Christian, but once you are in the faith, once you are deep in the faith, your job is to be more like Jesus and go.
But the key here is in the Greek, the emphasis is not on the go, which is just anywhere you are. It's on making disciples. That's what you're called to do. So
okay.
These are my 12th grade students. We're going to skip over this for time's sake, but these are my 12th grade students in Dahan. They're adorable.
That's where Celia teaches. Mm-hmm. I'll just get to the summary, and we want to show you a video because it's our reward, and I want you to see this because the video is very neat. We are making disciples who make disciples in Mongolia. That's one of the things we're doing. Celia is teaching English. You can't walk down the street without having somebody seeing you and say, "Are you Russian? No. Are you American? Can you teach me English?" Because there's a way out of Mongolia for them. If we give them head knowledge in English, they think they can get to maybe Korea and then America or something like that. They want out. They want to leave Mongolia. Mm-hmm. And so when I get in a taxi, I'll get asked, you know, "Why are you here?" And I'll say, "To teach English." And they'll think about it for about 10 seconds. They'll go, "No." That doesn't fit. It makes no sense. They won't say this part, but they're thinking it makes no sense for you to come to America to hear teach English. It just doesn't make any sense. Why are you really here? And we share the gospel. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. It's a amazing field. So we're going to skip to the video. I just want to share with you the reward of doing this. And it happens here and it happens there. But sharing Jesus is just an amazing story in Mongolia because you get to see things like this. This is in a city called Selenk, which is north of us, much closer to the Russian border. But a pastor friend of mine took 8 people up to be baptized, and this is what it looked like.